Straight from South Africa.
This is the strange and mysterious world with your hosts, Lee Straighten and William Pollinson.
Welcome to season one, episode 26. Today, Will, you've got mermaids. I've got the good old South African tokolosh. But nice. before we get on to that, though, you've got an interesting story about where you went last night. So tell us, man. Yeah. I'm excited. Tell us.
Well, it was this massage parlor. No, I'm just joking.
Was it Taiwanese? Oh, come in, free massage. $1.
Love you long time. It wasn't that. I went to the Rosicrucian. I became a member of the Rosicrucian order.
Hey, well done, well done. Yeah.
And so I went to their first introductory like lecture. I mean, I've been to two other things of theirs before, which were quite interesting. But I went to the one of their talks a while ago, like their presentations for the public, you know, before. But now that I've become a member, I can go to their membership, whatever, evenings. And so last night was the introduction of what they cover, you know, like all of the structures. And what's nice is that when you become a member, they send you like a weekly thing, like it's like a kind of like homework. You study it, and then there's like a whole lot of stuff you must for the week you got to contemplate on and kind of practice or whatever. It's like meditations and stuff like that. But I haven't actually gone into it because I've just got the stuff, so I haven't really looked at it. But the presentation was very exciting. Mm. Discusses origins and it's like what they cover in the certain, like there's like nine kind of initiations of like, once you've mastered this part of it, then you get initiated into the second part of it. And it covers more deeper spiritual and esoteric kind of knowledge. And then once you've mastered that, you get initiated into the next tier or whatever you want to call it until you get to the ninth. They cover like they say certain aspects, you know, what they cover in those sections, which is, you know, interesting. A lot of like, you know, spirituality, meditation, self-development stuff. Also, it covers like a lot of like psychic things, like how to open the latent potential in man, which that's what they're also in the Theosophic Society, they also call it like what they're trying to do is not only just bring peace and harmony and brotherhood to the world and, you know, make the place a better society, but it's also to open up the latent potential in man, which is like your psychic abilities and that, which they said that the Buddhists, that because theosophy stems mainly from Buddhism.
Yeah.
That's what like the Dalai Lama, not this current one, but he was the one that like Blavatsky was spoke to, and that was that they through their meditations, that's what one of the main goals was, to open the dormant abilities in man, like the latent abilities of man, what they like to call it. So that's also what the Rosicrucian order offers, like certain like things to open your psyche or your psychic abilities, your consciousness or whatever.
Okay.
So, and then also what was quite awesome is that, I mean, they say that it stems mainly from the mystery schools of Egypt.
So you went with a Rosicrucian thing. It was just like an introduction.
Yeah. So they have a meeting every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So, and then, I've got my homework that I've got to read through and study and whatever.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what's next Tuesday. I just saw this was the introduction. They told you this is what they cover in the certain tiers and what you can get out of it. And obviously it's like, you know, to better yourself, like spiritually, mentally, mm-hmm. physically, well, not physically, I don't teach you how to do push-ups or anything, but like, you know, like there's, it's a way to strengthen your mind and your concentration and your...
Yeah, because remember, the body has got to be balanced. So you've got to... Mind, body, and spirit has to be balanced. So that's why it's good for these things, because, you know, you're like physically, for me, I'm at the gym every day. So physically, I'm fine. But you need to balance. You need to be able to get the spiritual and the mental to balance. No. So that's good. It's good that you've gone in and involved there.
But that's the thing. Like when my sister's husband, he was like, because we went away on this Mozambique for a wedding. And we were there for like 10 days. And then he would always, he noticed like I would be missing for like a certain time in the morning and the evening because I'd be meditating. And then he was like, geez, dude, why do you meditate so much? Like, well, don't meditate your life away. And he's like, why do you do it so much?
Well, I understand.
I was like, dude, well, don't you want to understand the most sophisticated computer on the planet? I said, do you work out? And he's like, yeah, I do some exercise. So I say, oh, you value your body over your mind. So you rather have a better body than a mind, you know, like I, cause I also work out every day. I do push-ups and sit-ups and stuff. So I believe you got to exercise your body, your mind and your spirit, just like you said. So like the mind, I meditate to exercise my mind. I work out to exercise my body, and I pray to exercise my spirit, you know, I do 10 minutes of praying, like in the morning and the evening. So it's like it's to exercise every facet of my whole being, so I can be balanced, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think people don't understand it. So you must remember, we come from a background, you and me, William, and I think a lot of our listeners out there as well. We come from a background where we are searching for the answers. We're searching for the truth. We're searching for the spiritual enlightenment, the awakening, is what we're looking for. But a lot of people don't want that, and they're just happy to go on with their normal everyday lives. I'm not happy to do that. I'm happy when I start researching and I start finding truths. Like, for example, now you were talking about Rosicrucianism, and you were chatting about your guy that you're chatting to about theosophy and all the rest of it. But that all stems from our friend Hermes Trismegistus. Everything comes from there. So whether it be Thoth, which is the Egyptian god of writing, also the messenger god, who was associated with Hermes at the time for the Greeks. But we all know it comes from Hermes Trismegistus, which is prior to all of that. And it's the knowledge that he was trying to give to everybody. Well, not to everybody, but to those who have been or are wanting to be awakened. So all of that stuff, from Hermeticism to the Rosicrucianism to Freemasons, it all derives from him. It's all of his teachings. I was actually listening to a YouTube channel today with regards to the Book of Hermes or Book of Hermes Trismegistus. It's 2 hours long. Dude, it is a fascinating thing to listen to. Fascinating. You must actually go and listen to it. It's actually something to...
What is it called?
It just says, it's called the Book of Hermes Trismegistus or the Book of Thoth. Okay. You must go and listen to it. And everything that you're mentioning there, it all derives from him. It all comes from him, because he was the original messenger. He was the one that came to teach the abilities that the humans have, you know, where we can go with our lives and not where we are now.
Yeah.
But it's only for those that are ready to accept the fact that there's something more than just this physical. When you start understanding and you realize, hold on, there's something more than just this, then you start opening yourself to a greater universe or cosmos of things that are and the abilities that we have to progress. And when you get to that point, that's when you start investigating these things, and it all comes from Hermes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the thing. I don't understand why anybody else is not interested in this stuff, because otherwise you're just a breathing, shitting
shell,
like eating animal. You know what I mean? You're just walking around your life just eating and shitting and doing, you know,
and then you die,
and you're just a complete animal. So, like, I just don't understand. And it's funny, because then you see these people going to take, like, the normies, they go and take a mushroom ceremony or whatever, and they like suddenly like are so shocked into like, oh my god, there's actually something else toward other than us, you know, like, but they have to take mushrooms to realize it, and then they all like, it's like, you know, this big life-changing thing to them. And it's just like, yeah, of course, dude, like, you know.
Like, I actually feel sorry for those guys, I'll be honest, because when you start opening yourself, and a lot of people will say, especially the Christian guys, unfortunately, a lot of guys will say, oh, no, but that's a satanic path to tread. But if you go and look at the teachings and the readings, it's like completely opposite to Satanism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This year, it's so exciting when you go and you learn about things that we've been doing, like the remote viewing. And then it works, and out of body experience. And when you realize and you start experiencing these things, you realize, oh shit, there's so much more that we don't understand. And this is such an exciting path to go on.
I know. And the thing is that it's funny because my Christian friend that I love her so dearly, I work with her all the time, and she always tells me that she, because it's also like, because we go on trips together, like work trips, and she sees me meditating and she's like, that's evil. You don't know what you're getting yourself into because you don't know what you're opening yourself up to, what entity is going to attach to you. But she's proper Christian, like hectic. Yeah. And I say, the only reason why I believe in Jesus is because I started meditating. Because before I was meditating, I didn't believe in fucking anything.
Yeah.
As soon as I started meditating, my mind blew open and I suddenly realized, oh my God, that this Jesus thing could be real. There's like, God exists. And I said to more atheists, you should actually teach in your church how to meditate because maybe you'll get more people coming to your bloody church. It's like, then they'll realize there's something else more to us.
But do they not realize that prayer is actually a form of meditation?
Yeah, I also said, I tried to tell her that as well, but it is.
It is, because you're focusing on a specific thing. You're focusing on God, or if you're talking Jesus. So that is exactly meditation. that's what it's all about. So they mustn't get confused. But anyway, so how much does it cost? How much does it cost for Rosicrucianism?
It's just 2,000 rand a year.
$2,000 a year?
You can go all of the classes, you get all the study material. It's just $2,000 the year.
So how do they survive? Because, I mean, how many members are there? Like,
yeah, well, when I went there, I was like five people. But they got a nice little temple there, and it's a nice little space and everything. So I don't know how it survives. I mean, it's just all kind of just, so I kind of just relies on donations. And
okay, and let me ask you a question. In the temple that you went to, how many Egyptian stuff was up?
A lot.
Yeah,
there was a lot of Egyptian stuff all over the temple doors were Egyptian stuff, and the
architecture is Egyptian. That's all from Hermes, but Thoth. Told you. You'll find that mostly, even in the Freemason things, that they're mostly Egyptian things in there.
Yeah, but about the remote viewing. Geez, I had such a cool session this morning. Because I've been trying to remote view every morning and every evening. And this morning, I got my number and I'm like remote viewing. And then all of a sudden, these chapel windows. I saw these chapel windows with the light coming in, And it's also my mind. I'm like, oh yeah, it looks like that chapel that I was in France. And I drew the picture of the windows. And then I was like, oh, and then my mind tricks me and says, no, but you're imagining it. I'm imagining it, but I'm like, why would I think that? Anyway, I was drawing other things that I was looking at. And then I got to the image when I opened up the image to see what it was. It was inside of a church with the chapel window.
Awesome.
It was like perfect.
Was that the test round, or was that the actual round where it counts for points?
No, it was just the practice round.
So you got it 100%. You put it on a 10, I'm assuming.
I had to put it on 10. I'll show you my last three sessions have all been 10s. I was
really
put it on 10 and I nailed all three of them.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
How's yours been going?
My last two competition rounds, I've got them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But they weren't 10s. Yeah, one was a 5 and the other one I think was a 3 because I'd drawn something so different to what the pictures came up. So the one was a bit of a guess. But I had more of an inclination to choose the one that I chose because I had the feeling that that was what it was supposed to be. But anyway, it'll get there.
Maybe we should take pictures again to send to each other.
I think that's actually a better idea because I think the one that's online, it's not the number is not given by somebody. I think it's just randomly generated. And I think that's the problem. I think that because I had more thing with you sending me the stuff.
Yeah.
Than I mean, do with this.
I took a picture of a candle and you drew a candle exactly like you were a candle and a glass. And it was the candle in a glass. And I was like, fuck.
So that's exactly
what I was thinking because when I send you the picture, I mean the number, I clearly meditate on the number saying that connect this number to the picture, connect it to this picture, and then I send it to you. With that thing, it's just a random number that just comes up with the thing.
Yeah, so there's no actual energy given to that number for that actual picture. It's nothing. It's just a generation where you, when you're meditating on it, you're actually putting your, you're putting a physical energy to that so that you can actually find it in the Akashic field.
Yes, that's what that's exactly what I was thinking. But then also, sorry, I'm jumping back to our prayer where we're talking about meditation and prayer. I've just been looking at my audiobooks here. I've been listening to this book called Prayer by Timothy Keller. And it's so cool because it's like it goes into how all the different types of prayer and in religion, what the different thoughts of prayer are and like how it's associated with meditation and how how religion relates to God and also towards the East of when God, they say God's within and, you know, the Christians think God's external thing out and amazing. I'm really enjoying it. So anybody that's interested in learning more about prayer and what it is and all the different traditions it also discusses in terms of mysticism and in Orthodox Christianity and all the different thoughts of all the great preachers of the world, how they interpret prayer and what it does for you and how it helps you and stuff like that. Very good book. It's called Prayer by Timothy Keller.
And I can guarantee you all the religious texts that we have also all stems from Hermes Trismegistus.
Yeah.
Everything does. So those who want to know, go and research. Anyway, let's hop on to our South African Tokolosh.
Great.
Okay. So now look, there's not a ton of research on this. I mean, I went and had a look and there's not much to find. Mostly it is it's derived from our tribes here in South Africa, the Zulus and it's the Bantu tribes, the black tribes. And what had actually happened out in Lesotho, what the guys used to do, so they used to live in these little rondavels. Okay, for those overseas, a rondavel is like a mud hut with almost like a thatch roof. And back in those days, these guys used to have fires inside the houses to keep themselves warm, especially during the winter times. But the problem is what they didn't understand is when you've got a fire indoors, what happens? You've got carbon monoxide, a lot of it. And people used to fall asleep, but they never used to wake up because they used to die of carbon monoxide. But what they found was the higher you were off the ground, the less likely you were to die of carbon monoxide. So this is why the guys put their beds on bricks. So to avoid the tokolosh, the superstition is you put your bed on bricks so the tokolosh can't get to you.
Yes, but
But it actually derived from that superstition when the people were dying because they didn't understand the carbon monoxide story. But
or maybe they were just getting so carbon monoxide poisoning that they're hallucinating that there's this tokolosh and they're like, and then when they realize when they put their bed on bricks, because I know the whole story is that the tokolosh is, if you put your bed on bricks, he's a very short guy. That like,
so he can't reach
you. So he can't reach you because your bed's on bricks.
Yeah.
But now, it's just because now you're above the carbon dioxide, you're actually not hallucinating.
So the tokolosh itself is supposed to be this little hairy creature, like this white hairy little creature. He's supposed to be like a
foot. Is he white hairy? I thought he was a little black hairy.
No. 2 foot high. Now, this is a very strange thing. So how the tokolosh comes about, if you, and I don't want to give any ideas to our audience here, but if you have got an issue with someone, say you are jealous and you want them taken out for whatever reason it is, you would approach a witch doctor in South Africa. So you can call them Sangomas, but most Sangomas don't get involved with this stuff because this is like dark magic. So you will go to them and you will obviously pay them. And this is what you want. You'll say, okay, I want to get rid of X, Y, and Z. They will then say to you, okay, you need to go find a dead body, somebody that's already dead. You've got to bring this dead body back to the witch doctor. The witch doctor, but it must be quite fresh. It mustn't be an old, somebody you go and dig up and he's been dead for like 6 months. It must be quite a fresh body.
She's just not driving around the hood just looking like.
Well, I don't know if they go and kill somebody to do it on purpose.
Look at this gutter. Let's look at a button, this tree.
Yeah. So now you bring this dead body back. What the witch doctor does is they burn the eyes out,
Jesus,
and they cut the tongue off. And then they sprinkle the special, supposed to be this like magical dust that shrinks this body. And this now, the tokolosh now inhabits this specific body. Okay. Jesus. But because the eyes and mouth are out, the Tokolosh has got no, it can't do its own thing. It will do what the witch doctor tells it to do until the job is done. Once the job is done, the that body then dies and the Tokolosh, so the spirit leaves.
How does it grow its beautiful, lush, white?
This hairy body hair, and the tail.
This lovely hair of its.
So the magic, it's all a magical thing and then it disappears. Now, the problem with this, everybody thinks, oh, no, that's actually pretty cool. The problem with this, the person that's making the deal with the Tokolosh to say, I want to get rid of Bongani, okay? You are going to land up sacrificing a loved one. Could be a child, could be your mom, could be your grandparents, could be your girlfriend, your wife. The Tokolosh will choose. You don't choose. The Tokolosh will come and take.
Like, what way? Like kill him?
No. The Tokolosh comes and takes that.
Takes them where?
Takes them away. They die. Tokolosh, he will kill them. No, he kills them.
Oh, he kills them.
Yeah. Nice. So you must be prepared to lose a loved one.
Jesus.
So this is why it's very dark. It's very dark magic. That the guys
must be really pissed off for someone to do that.
Yeah. Look, there's not a ton of, you know, a couple of sightings here, there, and everywhere. There was one that apparently was involved in the church, and there was a whole big issue in the church. But sightings themselves are very rare to come by. And it's generally just among, look, there have been one or two sightings by white people, but it generally isn't a white thing. White people don't really see this. It's mostly the black people, and it's a superstitious thing. Very superstitious. So that's our talk.
It'd be cool to go speak to these people who saw it. I would love to.
Apparently, the Tokolosh kills you in your sleep. So he apparently sits on you and drains your life, and you don't wake up. And this is exactly where it comes from, the carbon monoxide poison, because the guy's just died in his sleep.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just like a academic way of trying to resolve, to say how it works, because they obviously don't believe in any spiritual or any kind of like other dimensional forces or entities or whatever, so they'll just explain it like that. So we don't really know.
No, we don't. And then that's, like I said, that's just that's the theory of how it came about from that. So whether or not that's the case, I don't know, but that's the main theory, the logical theory about why the Tokolosh and people dying in their sleep and how it came about. But yeah, not a ton of stuff. There have been some movies that have come out in South Africa regarding Tokolosh, but then again, that's just, you know, just movies and And then you got, obviously, on internet, like TikTok, you've got Oaks videoing it, but that's stupid stuff, man. You can see an oak in a mask and it's like silly. That's the very short introduction to the South African Tokolosh.
A short story for a short little creature.
Yeah. So tell us about some mermaids, because apparently, apparently the first person to see a mermaid was Christopher Columbus in 1493. That's a lot of bollocks, dude.
I don't know, because he said that, I know he wrote it in his journals.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, he wasn't the first to see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The first people to see it was back in Greece, dude. They were seeing it all the time.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, it's just because he's obviously a prominent person and they take it prominently, but he wrote it in his journals that he saw humans with a fish tail swimming in the water.
They weren't pretty at all, though. He said these eggs were not pretty.
And then everyone has tried to debunk it by saying it is a manatee. Have you seen a manatee?
Yeah.
I mean, if you had to mix up a manatee with a fishtail bean, I mean, you've got to be
freaking stupid.
Some serious, like,
you can see that's not a mermaid.
Propaganda on that boat that old that Columbus was traveling. I mean, alcohol would never make you hallucinate so beautifully as that. I mean, being an alcoholic for many years, that's always the thing, is that they say, oh, what were you drinking? And you see something. I mean, not that I saw anything, but I'm saying, like, that's the thing is, they always say, oh, you must have been drinking something. What are you drinking? And I'm like, geez, well, I don't know. When I was drinking, I never hallucinated ever. Even when I was like the most I was always drunker than everybody else all the time. And I never hallucinated one thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, how can you attribute anything to, like, drinking if you see something strange? I mean, I could understand if you're smoking weed or taking LSD or fucking mushrooms or ayahuasca or something, but not.
But also not remember drinking. The manatees only found in South America. So when they were seeing them in the Mediterranean, they were seeing them all places. There's no manatees there, dude.
Yeah, and also the thing is that you say it's been happening way longer than Christopher Columbus. Is that what I found when I was doing the documentary on the mermaids of Africa, which I'm still trying to get it released. But what I found was that it's because we all thought it was a Western thing in Africa. You know, like these native African people, they've seen these fish-tailed beings. It's come from the West. It's our mythology. We brought it here. Now they're saying it and all of this crap, whatever. But no, I mean, I spoke to an anthropologist that she did a PhD in the water spirits, the water divinities of Africa. And she said no, that she's got clear evidence of the missionaries that came here before anybody came to Africa. The first missionaries that set foot on land with their journals, they said that the natives are encountering these fish-tailed beings with fish bodies and a human body with a fish tail. And the thing is with Sangomas here in South Africa, well, Sangoma for people overseas is like a shaman. It's like a local spiritual healer, medicine man or woman that, you know, like a traditional healer or whatever. And they also use many things of like psychic kind of readings to giving you herbs and like a shaman.
Sending the tokoloshi off to you.
In the black magic stuff. But within African culture with the Sangomas, the shamans, they get a calling, which is when they're younger, they start seeing other entities or they start having psychic visions or dreams or like what me and you, if we had that in our young age, we would have been sent straight to the loony bin, put on Ritalin, fucking put on antidepressants, psychotic medicine for psychosis. We would have been, utterly been labeled lunatic. But in African culture, when that happens, they say you've got a calling. And that's when the ancestors, because it's an ancestral heritage from the ancestors, is like making contact with you and also spirit beings. And you now can see through the veil of this existence and the other worlds. And then you go, they say you're having a calling, and that means you are going to become a Sangoma, and you have to go for initiation, and they put you into a Sangoma school or whatever to become initiated as a traditional healer. So that's how it happens in African culture, which I believe is great and it's true. And that's I wish we would see that, because I think a lot of people are in the loony bin. I think it's just like it's something else that's not just I'm sure there is people that have, there definitely is people that have got like chemical imbalances or whatever, but they I think some of it's they need to look a bit further than the modern medicine to cure them. But so with the calling, there's the Ndau and Nguni, which is the water spirit and the land spirit. And the water spirit comes in the form of a snake or a fish-tailed being. And the snake either is just a normal snake or sometimes has seven heads. And this comes in the form of actually visualizing it, like a hallucination, or what you would call a hallucination. We would call it hallucination, but they could just see it. Or it's in a dream, in dreams. And they come with special healing powers and wisdom. And so this is how the legend goes. It's like it's not the legend. I mean, like this is, I mean, I've spoken to people that this has happened to them. So when they're younger, this is why also Africans, they're scared, like traditional African people, they're scared of their young children going near water. Not because they think that because a lot of the time when I keep getting mixed up. I don't know if it's in Ndau or Nguni, the water spirit one. When the child has a calling and they go near the water, the
water spirit drags them in.
Drag them in under the water and they go missing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when they go missing, the parents, nobody is allowed to mourn or cry or anything. Like as soon as you cry, then your child's gone forever. So they have to be strong and go straight to a qualified diviner, like a Sangoma or a Sangoma. And they have to ask, is this a drowning or is this a calling? Because if it, because sometimes it can be a drowning, obviously. But if it is a calling and it's been taken by the water spirit, then they have to go make a sacrifice of a cow or a goat or whatever to bring the child back. And then they'll take a goat there and they come back. So the anthropologist that I spoke to, she met many people that have been taken under the water from like 3 hours to weeks to even years. People went disappearing for years. And like I spoke to the one Sangoma that I interviewed for my documentary. She went under the water for a few hours. And the witnesses that brought that when she came back, they made the sacrifice, like she's out of her mind. She doesn't know where she is or whatever. And as soon as they make the sacrifice, it brings her back into this world where she can. And like the thing is that you don't know what happens to the body. Like, you know, it's who knows what happens to the body or whatever. But then that's like the initiation, because they go into this underwater realm of their ancestors and other spiritual beings. They say they see different creatures down there. I mean, like the ancestors, and it's an idyllic world where everything's just calm and peaceful or whatever. And they get all of the wisdom of how to heal and wisdom of what life is about or whatever. And they come back with these healing powers. Like the Sangoma that I spoke to, when she came back, when she goes to look for herbs, she gets guided. She goes and she just, there's a like entity or a spirit or something that just shows her what needs to be picked, what needs to, like she doesn't like have to have it written in a book like this in a picture that you got to get this or whatever. She just gets it and then I'll go into it. You know, I mean, it's a lot of Sangoma's huts, but they're like, and they've got all of the jars full of all of the kind of herbs and that. It's just because they've been guided on what to take and they can tell you what to take or whatever. So, and then I went to Oudtshoorn. I mean, it's so funny because when I tell people I'm making a mermaid documentary, they're like, oh, they think I'm on a flipping ship out in the ocean here, like trying to film a mermaid. But I'm like, no, I'm in the freaking Karoo Desert. And they're like, what? Mermaids in the desert? What, are you mad? Like, what? Like they think it's stupid anyway when I tell them I'm making a mermaid documentary. But now they hear I'm making one in the desert, they're like, they even think I'm even more stupid. But I'm like, no, you don't understand that this is where, like, in Oudtshoorn, there's mermaid paintings. Like I've got it on the documentary. Bushmen that have painted mermaid paintings all along the rocks there and everything. And I went to go speak to the Bushmen, the leader of the Bushmen people there, and he told me all about like what the mermaid means to them. You know, how it's to bring divine wisdom and healing to the people, and it's a lot of it is also because of to try and teach us how to treat the world and the earth, because they're obviously very worried about their water, the water sources and water and how we're treating the planet and that. And but they can also be very fierce, because a lot of people, they get excited and they want to go to these sacred pools at the Bushmen, because there's sacred pools there where the mermaid spirit lies or whatever, and they want to go and see them. And I interviewed like this one pastor. He became a pastor because he had a mermaid experience. He went there with his uncle. His uncle says, he said, no, I know where the mermaid, I saw this lady. It was at this time, it was a full moon, whatever. And I saw her at the pool and she had a fish tail and she was a beautiful lady, whatever. So they waited for the next full moon and they went there and he saw it. Him and his uncle showed him, and he saw this being, and he said that his mind opened up and he became very psychic after that. But he became a priest because he was so blown away by this experience that he became like, very, like started believing God, and he's a prominent preacher in Oudtshoorn. And unfortunately, I had to like blur his face because his wife was like, "Jesus, if the people see that you're on this
on a trip with the mermaids,
you're on mermaids, you're going to lose all of our people in the church." Yeah. So he got blurred out, and his voice changed.
Yeah,
but then his uncle got obsessed with it, and he went back there, and he kept on trying to see it. And eventually, they found him in the water, drowned.
The uncle.
Yeah, the uncle, yeah.
Oh,
so the thing is also, when I interviewed a lot of people, they said, you know, that have had witnessed the mermaid, you know, had the calling, you know, gone underwater and all of that. They said that when you're near the water, the mermaid can sense your intentions. And if they see that you've got bad intentions, they will damage you. They will kill you. They will bring you underwater and take you. They will like kill you. But that's why also with the children, because children are so innocent. That's why they take the children and they can, you know, and also and because they know that they're innocent. And but it was also fascinating because there was this one group of people that interviewed, and they were having a bra near this river, and they saw a mermaid going up and down. And but the thing is that they saw it, and it was like their friends that they're having the bra with. The one guy got so entranced by this thing that he walked towards the water, and they couldn't get his attention away. So eventually, when they got his attention away, they ran. They were so scared. They packed up everything. They jumped in their car, and they just went home as quickly as possible. And what I found was awesome, was so fascinating, is because like if one person sees it, yes, you know, they could be mad or they could hallucinate or whatever. But now I've got two families that they both see it. And a guy was telling me that they were so scared that the whole family slept in one bedroom that night. They even phoned the police to tell them what happened. And obviously the police are like, what the fucking nutcase. But then they slept all in the same room, like all the children and the parents and everything. They all slept in one room because they were so fucking scared.
But those are sirens. Those are Greeks called sirens. Those are the ones where they actually led you astray. They're almost like brain. Yeah. You didn't realize what you were doing. You would follow their voice.
Yes, that's exactly what they would
describe the sirens.
And the lady was saying, the lady that saw it, she said that no, that it made this beautiful sound, and she even tried to demonstrate it in the movie, but it was something like that. And then she says it was the most beautiful sound. It's just like it sinks into your heart. And then she said that then I wanted to interview the other family, but they didn't want to talk on the camera because the lady said that she was pregnant during that time, and that when she saw that what happened there, well, this is what her husband said. Sorry, her husband said that they didn't want to get on the camera because what happened that night, they lost that baby, and they attributed to the stress or what or maybe it was that thing, whatever, that made them lose the baby. So they don't want to, it was very hard for them to talk about it. So they don't want to go on camera. But yeah, so it was a fascinating journey and of discovering this thing. And as I said, Doug, I mean, we thought it was from the West, and we thought we brought it here, and it's and the thing is that it's just been here before the white man got here. But the thing is, it's not just in Southern Africa; it goes up into Africa. I mean, there's the Yami Yami and Zimbabwe. I mean, they were building that bridge; they built that huge bridge there, and they kept on. The local people kept on stopping working because they said they kept on seeing mermaids and they're too scared to carry on with the bridge. So eventually they had to go and get outside workers to actually come in, like from China and outside of Africa, that and white people and stuff like that, that they had to come and finish the bridge because the locals were too scared to carry on with the bridge because they kept on witnessing these fishtail beans in the water while they were trying to make that bridge. And
the Dogon tribe in Africa.
Yes, the Dogon tribe. Yeah, of course.
That god Dogon is actually half man, half fish.
Yes,
and he is actually mentioned in the Bible. Dogon dates back way to the Sumerian times. There's actually depictions of Dogon from the Sumerian times. With half fish and half man. So it's not new. Ancient stuff.
Yeah, I mean, those Bushman paintings must be a few, I don't know, 1,000 years. I don't know how old they are, but they're pretty old. And they have of the... and it's funny because those Bushman paintings of the mermaids are being so... so controversial because then the people that study the pictures, which are all white people in universities, they all say no, it's actually, because obviously they don't want to believe in mermaids and they don't want to believe in whatever, so they say it is swallows. It's a bird. So they say it's swallows. But then when I went to go speak to the bushmen there in the area there, they said no, this is mermaids, or they call it the caiman, or they call it the mamulambo, the great mamulambo, or something like that, the great mamulambo. So they said, no, it's the spirit of the water. I mean, I don't know why those guys just don't go speak to the locals.
Well, the local bushmen. We know that archaeology and all that stuff is kind of, a lot of it is guesswork. So they're just guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have any real substantial evidence to say what they're saying. I suppose that could be working both ways, but. You know, when logical mind comes in, that's all you can think of is logical and think, okay, this looks like a bird, but they don't know that. They don't know the history behind it. They don't know what these guys were doing. These guys obviously have been passed down from generation to generation, what it is, what the spirits are. If you look at the African continent itself and you go and look at mermaids, it's all over. Like you said, it's not just sectioned to one area. It's all over the world. It's all over Africa. And it's thousands of years old. It's not just birds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, fascinating. That was very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for it to be released, but it's just taking a bit of time.
Yeah. I wonder why, because in the early days, a lot of white people used, like we're saying, the Greeks, Persians, the Romans, Christopher Columbus, we were seeing it, and then it stopped. So I wonder why, because white people don't generally see those anymore.
I know, but that's also funny, because actually, you know, because I got the anthropologist and the paleontologist mixed up earlier. I did actually interview a paleontologist, but not because she was a paleontologist, but just because she actually knew a lot about the mythology of Africa and that. And she also said the same thing. She wonders why people are not seeing more of these things. I mean, she interpreted, because she's very science-based, she has said it's just hallucinations. And she says well, maybe it's because people are eating the right diet and they're not, I don't know, she made all of these assumptions about why people are not seeing things often anymore. But I think it's also because of our materialism that is taken us so far away from spirituality that we've closed the veil completely, you know, and see everything in such a materialistic viewpoint that we can't actually, maybe it's stuff that's obviously there all the time. We just can't see it because we're so cut off from it, you know,
I'm wondering if there's no connection, because what do we seem to see a lot lately coming from the water?
Pollution.
No, UFOs.
Yeah.
It's just kind of... We're getting tons of sightings from UFOs coming from underwater. So I'm wondering if there's no connection between the two.
Yeah.
I don't know how the connection would come in.
Isn't that the Dagon tribe said that it's beans from outer space, but they've got fish tails? I'm sure they said it was from outer space, but they've got fish tails.
Yes, correct.
That was the Dagon, yeah.
So maybe they actually, because where did they come from? Sirius, wasn't it? Sirius B.
Yeah, something serious.
Which is a water.
But what's interesting about the Dagon tribe is that they had that whole constellation drawn out on those rocks and everything. That, I mean, they, you know, tribe in the middle of North Africa there. And, you know, we didn't even know about those things in the constellation until like 100 years ago or something. Mm. So it's like it was very interesting when, you know, people went and studied and they're like, geez, they knew about this stuff. And these guys are living in huts. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they don't even know what a telescope is.
But so maybe that's the origins of the mermaids from in the world. Maybe they did. Maybe they came from Sirius B.
From another place.
And maybe the seawater over here is very similar to the water that's that side, and they made a home here. Possible.
Oh, yeah, and there's another interesting story about what I was making. Now I'm giving the whole documentary. It's like spoiler alert, yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say anymore. There's the Landsberg flood. You ever heard about the Landsberg flood? Anyway, there was a huge flood that like wiped out a small town here in South Africa. It, like, destroyed it completely. And I was interviewing the one Khoisan gentleman that lived on the farm just outside of Landsberg, and he said that he saw the fishtail bean in the river there. So he went and he called he says the white man, which is obviously the owner of the farm or whatever. So he called the white man, and the white man came with his gun, and he said he went there and he started shooting at the fishtail bean, like at the mermaid, the caiman or the mamlamba, whatever it was called. He started shooting at it. And he said that's when the flood came, and that's what destroyed the whole town. And he said it was from that killing of that mermaid.
And that town is Landsberg, Landsberg town.
Yeah.
Yes. So the whole town got flooded.
Yeah, it destroyed the whole town. Yeah.
You say you've got newspaper articles and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I got newspaper articles. I mean, obviously that doesn't say there's a mermaid in the articles.
Talks about the flood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the power of the fishtail bean if you piss it off. And there's many I've got. I mean, like, I don't want to just give away the whole documentary, but there's many other really great witnesses that I've got in there of like the almost awesome things that they've experienced. And well, some of them were pretty scary, but like, other witnesses and experiences that have seen this being and what happened to them.
Okay. Jeez. Yeah. That's awesome, dude. Well, that command. Thanks. Thank you. That was good. Good discussion around mermaids. Took a loss. Unfortunately, wasn't that long, but
we got him in. We got him in.
He just the tip. Just the tip.
Yeah.
And he's just quite the, a short just little the, just fella anyway.
Foot,
so
2 foot oak. Yeah.
Just the tip of the 2 footer.
Yeah. No, cool. All right. Well, Lekker, man. Cool. Thanks. Thanks for your time again tonight, and thanks for everyone for listening again.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Join us again next week as we touch on something else strange and mysterious in this world. But yeah, have a good evening, guys. We'll chat soon.
Okay, cheers, bye.
Cheers.
Cheers, man.